Welcome to Conversations Live. For more than a decade, we've brought you the best in books, entertainment, celebrity interviews, and current events. When the movers and shakers of the world have something to say to you, they say it to us first. Now celebrating 17 years of broadcasting success, here's your host, Cyrus Webb.
And welcome back, everyone, to Conversations Live. I'm your host, Cyrus Webb. Glad you all could join us once again, both for our radio audience and us tuning in online. We're glad you all could be with us as well. I'm excited to welcome Ben Whittacombe to our program today to talk to us not only about his journey, but also what it's been like for him to share some amazing stories over the years, to profile some amazing individuals, many of them, of course, you know, but now to be able to tell us about it in his brand-new book called Gatecrasher. And what's so interesting about this book is the subtitle, How I Helped the Rich Become Famous and Ruin the World. We'll talk to Ben not only about the writing of the book, but also the reflection on his work, his own life, and what he hopes you're able to take away from the work he's been able to do, of course, and the people he's been able to cover. Ben, thank you so much for the time. I really appreciate it.
Well, thank you. It's a real pleasure to be on your program, Cyrus.
Well, the pleasure's definitely all mine. Ben, I really felt like after reading the book, it was almost two stories in this book. So I'm curious to know about how you would think about that, because we're able to see, of course, the people that you were able to be involved with, the stories you share, the experiences you had, but also we get to learn a lot about you. I mean, did you realize you were going to be so much a part of the story as you were writing Gatecrasher?
Well, sure. The book is a memoir, so it is meant to be a description of my 20-odd years in New York City. I moved here from my native Australia in 1998, and I have been a journalist for all of that time. You know, and I had a bunch of adventures. I was a gossip columnist for a long time. I wrote a social column in the New York Times. I'm currently a magazine editor. So this enabled me to sort of sample a really sort of an elite lifestyle that, of course, was not my own lifestyle, but I was in the rooms of rich and famous people, and I really was the lens through which I understood American culture. So it's exactly as you said. Half of it is my story, but I think it also it's a window on a particular kind of American experience that maybe not everyone has seen.
Exactly. And I think what was so interesting for me about that part of the story, Ben, because I did expect to know more about you, was the connections that were there. I think a lot of times when we look at, especially today, we look at celebrities and we think we don't have anything in common with these individuals, or, you know, they have such a different life. In reading Gatecrasher, I think you kind of see that that's not always the case, right? I mean, sure, they may have more influence, money, and, you know, and attention, but one of the things you show is that, you know, their issues or issues that we all deal with. Did you know going in that that was going to be one of the things that came through in the book?
Well, you know, it's interesting. I think it is difficult to be a celebrity, and I think if any of your listeners have a choice between being rich or famous, I would recommend being rich and not being famous, because it really is difficult. And you know, frankly, there is a certain kind of personality that is drawn to being famous. I think our president is an example of that. You know, some might call that personality type narcissism. And others who, you know, become famous as a byproduct of their work really struggle with the attention, and they bake in the spotlight. And I talk about in the book how when you meet a famous person for the first time, it's almost like wearing a pair of 3D glasses, because you have the physical real person in front of you, but you also have in your mind their reputation and their image. So it's the persona and the person, and you kind of have to merge those two disparate images into the person who's standing in front of you. And I think that's probably why a lot of celebrities honestly struggle with drug and alcohol addiction, because it's so much mental pressure being in that position that it is very difficult.
We hear a lot about New York, Ben. I mean, in your book, it's almost a person in itself. Talk to us about the city for you and how it really does kind of take on a life of its own.
Well, the great thing about New York City is it is more interesting than any individual person. So I think if you set a memoir in New York, then it's really helpful, because the city is so interesting that it takes some of the pressure off of the individual writer. But, you know, it really is the crucible of the American dream. I know that sounds hokey, but it's that promise that draws millions of immigrants to the city every decade, as indeed it drew me. And, you know, I'm from Australia, which is kind of the provinces, culturally speaking. there was certainly a limit to the kinds of people you could meet staying home in Queensland, where I'm from. So I jumped on a plane and I went to the big city. And what I find is that the local news in New York is almost like it's international news. I mean, when I go back to visit my mother in Australia, the conversations that we have there around her kitchen table, they're about Donald Trump and they're about the things that are happening often in New York City, because it is such an important place that what happens here has, you know, sends ripples all over the world. So I was really drawn to being in that beating heart.
Yeah. There are two parts of that in the beginning of the book I want to read, and we talk about it a bit, because I thought it was interesting as we're going to set the stage for the work you were able to do. You wrote this in the book: the generation who remembered the 60s and 70s was always talking as if New York had come and gone like a bus, carrying with it the last punk rockers and Greenwich Village folk singers and crusty second-wave feminists who had ever made the place interesting. And then you go on to say, but the city then has always belonged to the young. So talk to us about the impact that New York had on you and how that kind of affected how you kind of looked at yourself and also the work you wanted to do.
Well, you know, it's fun to be young. And I think I was 27 when I moved to New York, so young enough that I still wanted to get out every night. I'm now 49. And frankly, my interest in going to nightclubs and being out on the scene is much reduced, which I think is just the normal arc of life. But I was so energized by being in my 20s and being in New York City and wanting to go out everywhere and like stick my nose into every little different scene and nook of the city, that is what made it interesting. And I think that obviously the city is a bit challenged in our year of COVID, but hopefully it will recover. And I think New York City will remain an interesting place to be young. You really have to bring a lot of enthusiasm here, and I think that's why a lot of people burn out of being in New York City, because it does take a lot of energy, and it's not really a place you can coast. So some people come and don't stay very long, but as long as you don't mind going out every night, it's a fascinating place to be.
Right. And I think, again, that's what makes a book like this so interesting, because we're able to get, I think, a great backstory. You're able to set the stage for us, Ben, before we kind of get into, you know, that celebrity life, you know, that we automatically think about when we think about certain places. Do you think a book like this, and this may sound like a strange question, but I thought about it when I was prepping for your segment. Do you think this book in some ways kind of shows that the New York story, the experience that you had, is an experience that a lot of people can have? I think a lot of times people look at a lot of these things, they look at places and think, that's something I could never be a part of. Do you think, because of your own backstory, that you're kind of an example of what you can do by going to a city like this or being involved in the kind of work that you were involved in?
Well, I do think that New York, although it's a difficult place, it's also a welcoming place. And like I said, it sounds a bit hokey, but, you know, the American dream is a real thing. And I do think that you are accepted as a New Yorker just by being here and by having 2 feet on the ground. And like if you I lived in London for a little bit as a younger person. And, you know, in London, they just never accept you as a Londoner. You know, even if you're from like a few minutes outside the city, it's just not a thing that you can ever be. But in New York, I think they're much better about, as long as you're here and you're willing to participate, you're sort of one of the gang. And I do think that prompts holds true for anyone who wants to come here.
Right. So true. It's a great thing. And I think that's one of the big parts, again, as the book is kind of set up. I want to say, for those who are just tuning in, either on the radio side or online, you're listening to Conversations Live. We have Ben Windicom joining us for this segment. He's the author of the book, Great Gatecrasher, How I Helped the Rich Become Famous and Ruin the World. So let's talk about the writing, because that is now, of course, what a lot of people have gotten to know you for. Could you have imagined, though, and this is why I wanted to set the interview up this way, Ben, could you have imagined when you came to New York that you would be able to have the impact that you've been able to have when it comes to celebrity culture?
Well, I would say probably celebrity culture had more of an impact on me than I had on it. But, you know, certainly, so the book is, basically I spent 10 years writing about famous people and 10 years writing about rich people. So those are kind of different sides of the same coin, you know, in terms of privilege and influence. And what I noticed was that the rich were adopting the tactics of the famous, because, you know, historically you have this sense of rich people are a bit snooty and they don't like publicity and they, you know, this old sort of WASPy idea of that you only have, you should have your name in the paper three times, when you're born and when you're married and when you die. And the sort of like part of having class and elegance is turning your back on publicity. And what I noticed happening in my 20 years in the city is that that totally went out the window. And successive waves, be it reality television or social media, have all reinforced this notion that being famous is sort of quintessentially American. And these rich people, again, getting back to the president, he's a great example of that, adopted publicity as a means of increasing their own power. So that process was what I was trying to describe in the book, and you were very kind to phrase it in the way that you did. But certainly I think that the culture had more of an impact on me than I had on it.
But, you know, I want to stay with that for a second, though, Ben, because, I mean, it did kind of, and well, okay, even if, you know, we are to say that it had more impact on you, but it has definitely helped to propel you forward, would you say, and to be able to do other things. You've been able to do other things because of what you've been able to do in that celebrity culture and celebrity bubble.
Well, I think that being a foreigner gave me a certain perspective on it, because it was a different country's culture, and I was able to see it from that point of view. I think that maybe if you grow up in this country, if you grow up inside the culture, it just seems normal, and you don't notice what's unusual about it. And you certainly, if you don't know the culture of other countries, you don't know what's unique about it. You just think that's the way life is. And, you know, New York is one of the cultural engines of the country, and the United States is the cultural engine of the world. I mean, the things that happen here trickle down to really every other country and culture around the world. And so that was why it was exciting for me to be in New York, because I felt like I was really sort of witnessing the spark, if you will, that started every larger fire. It's those cultural changes that I was able to observe and regard as uniquely American, and realize that they were going to have this huge knock-on effect and affect not only the rest of the country but the rest of the world. That to me was interesting to describe.
Gotcha. And I think too, the other side of it, you mentioned of course about, you know, being famous, and then of course, you know, what we think about when it comes to wealth and everything that comes along with that, you know, the idea of, you know, of being known. But also one of the things I think that we see comes up in the book that you're able to benefit from, Ben, is trust. Talk to us about that, if you don't mind. That was another interesting thing for me. What was it like for you to see the trust you were able to build, and even respect?
Oh, well, and you know, I was a gossip columnist, so it's funny.
Yeah.
People don't often use the word trust and gossip columnist in the same sentence.
Right.
But, you know, I think that, you know, it's important to have integrity in whatever you do. And I do think that you can write a gossip column with integrity or without it. And you know, whether you're a taxi driver or a waiter or a U.S. senator, you can do your job with or without integrity. So it was important that I think people could trust you to be honest and not to have an agenda, you know, like you're not writing, you know, gossip columns are occasionally snarky, that's true. It goes with the territory. But, you know, when one is snarky, it's not for your own benefit. Like you're not knocking someone down because you have some personal gain, even if it's only emotional satisfaction. In a sense, you have to be fair, and you have to be interested in reporting the truth. So as long as you have those fundamental journalistic principles, I think people will trust you.
Yeah. And I bring that up because of, you know, you have situations that come up in the book, like with the stars, with two R's, who did not mind having you around and seemed to really enjoy your company. Do you think the relationships are also something you've been able to take with you? I know you've gone on now, I saw in an interview you were talking about now being the editor-in-chief for Avenue magazine, but when you kind of reflect on these experiences, Ben, do you feel like that's also one of the things that people got to know you for you as you got to know them for who they are?
Well, I hope so, and it's very kind of you to put it that way. You know, one of the things that struck me about New York City is how, certainly compared to the provinces of Australia where I'm from, is how kind of shameless everyone is. And when I got into the gossip column business, I thought, oh, well, people aren't going to really want a gossip columnist hanging around. And in fact, it was the complete opposite. This is a city that really relishes publicity. It's the lifeblood of how things work here. And in fact, you know, you not only are you not shunned as a gossip columnist, you're invited to every party. and everyone wants to talk to you. And you mentioned the stars, who are friends of mine, who are sort of a subplot. One of them got involved in a financial scandal and went to prison. But to your point, they invited me to hang around with them, and I traveled with them on their private jet, even though I was a journalist, and these sort of other shenanigans were going on in the background. So one of the things that I was very surprised about is how welcome sort of the institution of gossip columns are in this city, and how people are really very open to that.
And I think it kind of leads us to where we are today. I mentioned I definitely want to talk about, you know, where we are today when it comes to, you know, celebrity culture. But one of the things that you wrote about in the book, and I just want to read this, Ben, you wrote, as the 2010s progress, the desire among wealthy private citizens to be the subject of movie star profiles in the fashion pages only increased. And so now, of course, everyone wants attention. And thanks to, you know, different platforms, including ones like this, and, you know, and magazines and blogs and, you know, and social media, now it's very easy to be able to get that. What has that been like for you to see how even since that time, since looking at the 2010s, now even 10 years from there and where we are today, what has it been like for you to kind of see how this culture has really exploded?
Well, I think that there were two big changes in the 20 years that I describe in the book. One of them was cultural, with the birth of reality television, which sort of trained a whole generation of people to behave like they were on camera. And I do think that I think that young people, you know, high school and college age, it really did have an impact on how they behaved among their own friendships. I think they started mimicking the behavior they saw on television, the sort of Real Housewife shenanigans, and this notion of almost the worse you behave, the more screen time you get, and that was considered a good thing. And then, of course, 10 years after reality television came in, we had social media, which just added rocket fuel to that existing trend. And now everyone is a publisher, and everyone is the star of their own show, if they choose to be, because of the smartphone that they have in their pocket. And, of course, a lot of personalities just don't want to be that, and those are the people who are not TikTok stars. But we also know that every 17-year-old who wants to be can perform on TikTok every day. And so the sort of the adult version of that was me as a New York Times profile writer. You'd get all these rich people who would give you enormous access because they wanted to be portrayed glowingly in the New York Times, which is sort of hilarious because if you ever read those profiles, the New York Times often doesn't, you know, they're often not very flattering because, of course, the Times can't be seen, or any decent journalist can't be seen to be being impressed by their money. You know, so you have to, I don't want to say take them down a peg or two, but you have to look at them with gimlet eyes and not be too impressed just because they're rich. But even though these profiles are often not particularly flattering, it certainly doesn't stop people wanting them.
Yeah, for sure. And it definitely can have an impact on all of us, not only psychologically, but also, of course, physically as well. And I think that's one of the interesting things, again, about being able to read something like this, because it lets us to know that, you know, regardless of how glamorous the life is, that you are still doing a job. I mean, you even wrote in the book, covering the media circus as much as the principal players for the Daily News, writing a gossip column started to feel like an actual job. And even though some people would say that's the life, right, it was work. So what was your hope when you finished the book, Gatecrasher? What was your hope that people would know? Again, I'll go back to how I began the conversation, not only about you and your own journey, but also the celebrity culture that you've been able to profile.
Well, I think there are two pieces there. One about the work aspect of it is I think it's important to, when you exist in that kind of world and you are constantly meeting fancy people, it's really important to remember your place and to stay humble, because I went to the best parties in the world. You know, I went to the Vanity Fair party, I went to the Oscars, you know, this party, that party. But I was there to work, and they weren't inviting me because Ben is so fabulous. They were inviting me because Ben wrote for a newspaper. And so I was representing, you know, whatever media outlet that I was working for at the time. And they weren't inviting me personally. And I just, it's important to stay humble and remember that you're basically one step up from a waiter in those positions. And people who live that life and delude themselves that they're just as fancy is the stars, tend not to do very well in the business. But the other part of your question, you know, what was I trying to explain through Gatecrasher? You know, I went back to Australia in 2018 because my mother had a health problem, which fortunately she got over. And I thought that maybe I might have to move back permanently to Australia to care for her. And I just wanted to explain to myself really what I'd been doing for the last 20 years. And I sat down to work it out on a page, and it became the book. And I realized in the course of explaining my own life that I'd actually witnessed this significant and I thought quite interesting cultural transformation in the relationship between the power elite and the media. And I'd seen it with my own eyes over the last 20 years in New York City, and I wanted to write about it.
Well, it's really enjoyable, and you know, when I first found out about the book, I knew it was something that I wanted to read, and I'm so glad I can now be able to share it with our audience here. Again, everyone, Ben Windicombe has been our guest. He's the author of the book Gatecrasher: How I Helped the Rich Become Famous and Ruin the World. And I guess it would depend on your point of view, I guess, for the audience. As far as that's concerned, as you kind of look at the world today, it is available through our friends at Amazon.com, pretty much however you all like to enjoy your books, whether we're talking print, the Kindle edition, as I have, but also the Audible as well. You guys can be able to take advantage of that there or get it through your favorite local bookstore. Ben, how can I stay connected with you?
Well, I tweet occasionally at Ben Windicombe. I'm a little rough today because I was up last night drunk tweeting the Republican National Convention. so that's or you can check out my magazine, avenuemagazine.com.
All right. So make sure you guys are staying connected with Ben. Ben, this was a lot of fun. Thank you so much for the time. I really appreciate it. And looking forward to having you back on the program again, if you don't mind.
I'll just have to write another book to earn my keep. Cyrus, thank you. This was a real treat. I appreciate it.
Hey, more than welcome. And we thank your audience for tuning in to another great segment of Conversations Live. Until next time, I'm your host, Cyrus Webb, saying, as always, enjoy your day, enjoy your life, enjoy your world. Thank you all for choosing Conversations Live. Let's make it a great one. Take care.